a gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is the problem.
Is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I don't want to go on the radio today. I don't. Oh, I got to adjust the mic's different for here because it's like totally different. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones radio program coming to you from Camp Kawea in what we like to call Stronghold Radio. I just screwed up. Before I went on the air, I got a toothache. I took some Ambisol, and I think I used a little too much, and my entire face is now numb. This is really hard. I'm probably going to drool. Somebody get me a drool rag. Give me the dog.
No.
This is kind of how it feels when you have a stroke. Anybody wants to know what it feels like to have a stroke? Put a bunch of Ambisol. I didn't read the instructions, like, a little dab will do you. I, like, squeezed the whole tube into my mouth, started slipping it around with my tongue. Ah, now I sound like a 15-year-old kid with braces. Oh, man. I did it like 2 minutes before we went to air, and now it's hitting. Well, folks, I am Dutch Jones. Thank you for tuning in to a show that's going to challenge your worldview. It's going to make you go, hey, I can't believe the guy just said that. We try to bring you facts, reality, with kind of a warped sense of humor. And that got me in trouble today all over Facebook. For some reason, I just got on this kick. I was talking about Zionism. Some days I talk about white supremacy. Sometimes I talk about communism. Sometimes I talk about scumminess. But I got a lot of hate mail again today. This time, yesterday I was getting hate mail from Arabs. Today I was getting it from Jews. And I'm here to tell you, neither one is all that polite. I can see why they come from the same seed. You know, they're both Semites, I guess. And made a lot of Jews mad at me. I was just talking about things, you know, factual things. I was just posting articles where Jews were vicious and vile against Christians in Israel, the USS Liberty. And, man, do people get mad. I wasn't even going into eschatology, you know, about how Israel shouldn't even be a nation and all that kind of stuff. Twinkle Toes points out that if I got a toothache, I should have it pulled. Yeah, it's actually, if you need any dental work done now, do it now before the collapse. That's a good point, Twinkle Toes. I got to get to our doc. We have a dentist that's part of our militia, and I got to get to him. I've never, ever, ever been to a dentist except in the Army. And that was to x-ray my teeth and that. I've got a weird set of teeth. I'm an anomaly. I'm missing molars. My teeth are small. They're colored kind of green because of tetracycline poisoning when I was in utero. I've never had a single cavity. I've had some teeth chipped, but where I came from, that was just part of growing up. Everyone in my family, their teeth fell out of their heads. I don't know if it's because they smoked or... But I just don't eat junk food and stuff. But now having this toothache thing, but that's a great point. If you need to now get tooth work done, you know, it's one of those things. There's a great book, Where There Is No Dentist, and you should get that. We have it in our little survival. We're not online?
You can.
Oh, you can find it online. I couldn't hear you, Lou. I didn't hear you through your microphone. Did you turn your microphone off?
No.
Talk into your microphone. Let's make sure it's working.
One.
No, lean into it, brother.
One.
Okay, there we go. So, yeah, get those things done. You're going to have any cosmetic surgery, a tummy tuck, a butt lift? Going to have your nose done? You know, now's the time to do it. Get those elective things. Although I don't consider tooth surgery an elective, but, huh?
Liposuction.
Liposuction you need to do. Do that now. Store the fat. Yeah, that would be good. People want to talk about the birth certificate thing. I'm going to tell you what my view is outright. He's evil. Barry Sotero is evil. The evidence has been there. since, what, 2008? And if the authorities don't care about it, there's really nothing we can do. And if it does go to the Supreme Court, they're just going to find in his favor because they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of the whole world. They let an illegal alien get to be president. I do believe that the birth certificate produced today, or the record of live birth, as they called it, is a farce. He had, what, 2.5 years? Heck, I've got 3 birth certificates right now. I've got 3 or 4 DV-214s with different names on them that I've done just messing around. He has the complete resources of the New World Order. Don't you think they could make something up? So I'm not that impressed with this birth certificate thing. But again, I'm not like, oh, it's, you know, it proves he's, you know, he's really an American. There's so many issues on this thing, and if you guys want to discuss them, I will. But all the main, you know, the mega radio stations, just like mega churches, they're already talking about it. You know, his father wasn't a legal citizen. She was only 18, not 21 in 1961. Couldn't impart her citizenship. He changed his name and announced his citizenship when he was readopted or adopted by some Sotero dude in Indonesia. Trump's the funny one in all this. He's like, look what I did. Look what I did. And here's what I think. There's 2 options here with Trump. Because he was a registered Democrat when Obongo ran for office. He may have done this just to do some live theater. You know, for Obongo. Get it out there. So he could get it out and say, here, look, here it is. Okay, I take it. Or he could be taking one for the Republicans. I've never trusted Trump. I've told you guys that. I think he's a clown. I think he's a carnival barker. Like Obongo said, it's one thing I agree on. You know, he's a bad hair clown. But he may be doing this for the Republicans just to get some of that stuff out of there so they can deflate it. Because they're scared to death. They're scared to death of this issue backfiring in their face and the extremists like you and me making the Repubtards look bad. But, you know, they're looking at it wrong. I see Freedom saying, well, he also said clove oil is great for teeth and mouth. Yeah, we've got a bunch of that stored. He also said that the long-form birth certificate usually has a footprint on it. I don't know what Hawaii's laws are, but that was the first thing Stacy said. Where's the footprint? You know, and they're just showing this one bit, and it's all framed in the book and nice. And I've got a birth certificate with a name on it that my family made up. All I can tell you is that I was raised by whores, thieves, and fugitives. They wrote to the county that I was born in and said that we, and this is in the 70s, early 70s, so it was a little, I was born in 1966, so you can do the math, and just wrote them a letter, not even on official letterhead, and said we needed a reissued birth certificate with a changed name because my mother had remarried and I'd been adopted. So the name that I use when I'm not on the air is on a birth certificate. The name that I was born with is on a birth certificate. Another name that my family made up to go into hiding, long story, is on a birth certificate. My mother was able to generate birth certificates. Social security numbers. We had multiple social security numbers as kids because my mother took part in all kinds of welfare fraud. So I'm not impressed with a picture, a scan of a book from Hawaii when they spent 2.5 years, and I do believe they went, because there were several cases that went up and they were thrown out. People on the radio, we've never heard of any cases, you know, where this has been tested. So, I mean, when you're dealing with evil, it's like trying to go to court on a speeding ticket and being upset when they make you pay the fine. Because it's all rigged against us. We're not going to win on this issue. There's so much other stuff that he's doing. Those of you that want to go into the courts, fine, do that. Go after the unconstitutionality of health care. I can't believe I said that with my mouth so numb. But, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over this. I did think it was funny that Trump was saying, you know, hey, thank you very much. I got one thing accomplished. Now show me your transcripts from Occidental College. Show me your entrance applications for Harvard. Because I've read all kinds of stuff on the internet today that he couldn't get into Harvard if it weren't for affirmative action and a huge donation from a Muslim family. Could be true. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff going around the internet. There was, remember his paternal, his supposed father, his Kenyan grandmother, was on recordings on a phone. And I think it was Jerome Corsi, or some people say Jeremy, but I think it's Jerome, interviewed her, and she said, no, he was born in a hut in Kenya, and I was there, and now she's disappeared. Starting to look like the Clintons, huh? First his maternal grandmother dies, the woman who raised him dies right after he gets into office, and then his paternal grandmother disappears. I don't know, where's the guy who adopted him, the Sotero?
Killed him.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he still around in Indonesia? I don't know. It's starting to get a little creepy. But I think that pushing this doesn't discredit us. I don't think it takes away from the real argument. It's fun to talk about, you know. But I think it's only going to play if you're sitting around a table with people that have a brain to figure it out. Otherwise, people are just going to look at you and they're going to gloss over and go, oh, you're one of those birthers. Well, yeah. Oh, you're one of those idiots. You know, that's what I was saying today to people. Oh, you're one of those morons that believes whatever Fox News tells you. And whatever, you know, whatever the party line is, you want to take it. So, yeah, it was interesting. I couldn't believe somebody called me at like 6:30 this morning. I don't normally get up that early. 6:30 this morning, hey, he produced his birth certificate. And I'm like, who? They're like, oh, Bongo. And I'm like, oh, okay, I knew this would come, but I thought it would be a little closer to the election that he would produce something. But, yeah, that's fine, you know. And what's going to happen is document forensics guys are going to attack this thing. They're not going to be allowed to see the real one. They're not going to get to see the embossed seal on it, like I See Freedom saying. They're not going to get to handle the real one. But people are going to pick at it. There's a few things I saw that I was kind of like, well, that's a little weird. You know, what's up with that? You know, 1961, and, you know, it looks awfully good. It doesn't look faded or smeared, or they keep them in books. I mean, my original birth certificate was lost in a fire, and they've reproduced it, and it says reproduction on it for my actual name at the moment I popped out of my troll-like mother. Yeah, I do disrespect my mother. I know I'm violating the Ten Commandments, but if you knew her, you'd never mind. But, anything can be done to manipulate paperwork. You give me a razor blade, a newspaper, and some documents, and, you know, that's it. You know, I can do whatever I need to do. And they may not pass an expert, but a photocopy on the internet thrown up on news, yeah, okay. It's not the Shroud of Turin, you know. We're not. It's a piece of paper with some words on it. I'm not impressed. But I don't get that excited because it's just like anything else. It's just like all these other villains out there. They do so much else that is evil and vile. You know, they're like the middle managers for Satan. That, what difference does it make where they came from? We already allow illegal aliens to pour into our country every day anyway, so what difference does it make if there's one in an executive office? Yeah, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. And I still think Donald Trump's up to something and not really going to run for presidency. If he does, you know, that's cool. But somebody today, I can't remember who it was, I can't remember which blogger it was, challenged Donald Trump a $10,000 bet that he's not even going to apply to run for president. He goes, I'll bet you $10,000, and he wouldn't answer him. But that would be interesting. It's all a game. I think that's my point. And I didn't realize it was my point until just now, folks. This is a game. They're going to distract you with birth certificate talk instead of issues. And instead of going after him for all the terrible things that are going on in the world, the new wars. You know what else? The other thing I said, what is happening that they're trying to distract you from? And what did they do today? They shifted all of his cabinet people around. Panetta from the FBI became the Secretary of Defense. They moved Petraeus to CIA. They moved a bunch of people around, and it was kind of like an afterthought. And then was it Bernanke comes out to talk about the Fed? The first time ever the Fed has a press conference. And nobody, you know, like, everybody's screaming about, ooh, a birth certificate. He put out his birth certificate. But Bernanke's out there lying to you about what the Fed's all about. And he says, we're gonna stimulate the economy, which translates into, we're going to print more money. So those of you that have gold, hang on to it. It's going to keep going up. Those of you that want to find gold, you better go out and get some now. Hang on to it. And it's just creepy, scary, weird to me that people just don't get it. That's the big thing I took away from this is that, man, I'm getting like left and right shifting in my headphone. I don't know if there's something wrong with this or... Yeah, did you break something again? Oh, look at that. I just lost everything. Okay. Yeah, this thing's shorted out. I just won't touch it again. But that's it. So this isn't some epiphany for conspiracy, you know, people. It's not the end. I still think he's an illegal alien Muslim. I was hoping on his birth certificate it would say religion Islam, or Mohammedist or something. Wouldn't that have been great? That I would have been excited about. And maybe that's why they've been hiding it, because they had the doctorate and pay off some people, like the clerks. Because maybe he's different. He's not going to be like Hillary and Bill and kill them. He's buying people off. Maybe that's where his $2.5 million went to. Big Ben is going to stimulate the slavery. There you go. Yeah, Big Ben Bernanke. I saw that. They were calling him Big Ben on Fox News when I was doing stuff. I was like, oh, man. Hero worship among the Republican Party. They just love these guys. I did find it interesting, though, on a lighter note, and I don't usually talk celebrity news unless it involves me, you know, somebody I met or something, but Obongo didn't get invited to the royal wedding next month. I mean, even Lou's going to the royal wedding. You got your invitation, what, yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Lou's going. Margaret Thatcher's going. Mr. Bean is going to the royal wedding, and Obongo wasn't invited. Now, maybe it's a security thing. They also didn't invite Tony Blair. And somebody else, I can't remember who it was, but they invited, like, the crown prince of Unga Bunga Land.
Oh, the Buckhead.
Bahrain and what was it named?
The soccer player.
Yeah, they invited
Victoria
Buckhead. Oh, I can't think of their names. Beckham.
Beckham.
The Beckhams from L.A. You know, they're British, but he plays for the L.A. whatever soccer team. And they invited them, but Obongo didn't get to go. Now, I don't know if they offered an invitation to former presidents at all, but I just found it funny that he wasn't invited to the shindig. And I'm going to say right here, I could care less about British royalty. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's archaic. I think any country that still has a monarchy should not be our friend. Man, this is driving me nuts in my headphones. What did you do here? Hang on, guys. I got to fix this. Okay, it's something to do with... Hello, hello. I don't know if that's going to... It's cutting in and out of my headset, and it makes it really hard to talk, so the beating will begin promptly at 6, Lou. If you want to call in about the birth certificate, the royal wedding, if you got your invitation... I don't know if it's cutting out over there.
No.
Are you guys hearing stuttering out over the air? I need to know that. If it's just my headphones, I can deal with it, but that's too bad. You can call me at 559-346-8362. 559-346-8362. Viewer mail. I don't have viewers. Listener mail. There were a few people who liked our tank stuff last night. They really enjoy it when I get meat and potatoes. I can only do that so often. It doesn't really make for a good show to just do that, because that stuff you guys can go learn in manuals. But when people throw in stuff to the mix like Steve, and Steve had a strategy too, just stay away from the tanks. I had a couple of people say that we were disagreeing with one another. No, not really. I mean, I may not have voiced it, but I wish, you know, I had RPGs and anti-tank weapons. But if armor's coming, I'm going to run away. So it wasn't that we disagreed. It's like every situation is different. And the best, you can win a fight by not even fighting. You know, to sound awfully Bruce Lee-ish or something, but... you know, nobody really wins a fight. I don't want to risk losing any of my people in my group if I can. But if I can take out a huge piece of equipment with just some good old-fashioned, you know, monkey wrenching, I'm going to do that. Queen Elizabeth owns most of the world's real estate. That's why it's a big deal. Yeah, but see, it's a big deal because we let it be a big deal. I understand what you're saying. I see freedom. But... I'm not going to go watch the Pope. They're probably the second biggest real estate holders, right? The church, the Roman Catholic Church. But I don't care about them. And on that level, I mean, I care about the evil that, you know, empires do and the mess that they got us in. I still don't say July 4th or Independence Day. I say I hate England Day. I literally have no love for England. My Scottish ancestors hated England. Dutch to a point, but I cannot stand England. I've got one or two really good English friends, people that I've known since childhood that I love dearly, good friends. I've got a lot of Irish and Scottish friends and Welsh and other people that have been victims of the British Crown. I'm not you know, getting into it. And I think this royal stuff, this soap opera stuff, it happened with the, what was her name, Diana. It's just a distraction to make people go, oh, it takes me back to Camelot and into a finer time. And they're not, and it's like Sergeant Slade just put up there. It distracts the focus from guns, bullets, and all that stuff. You know, it takes away the emphasis on just how bad the world really is right now. And to me, it's a kick in the teeth when you've got people, you know, in the Sudan living in huts being killed by Muslims, and you've got them spending gazillions of dollars of, you know, money that they've leached out of the middle class and poor around the world. So, yeah, I just don't want to be... But you peasant must see the wedding. Yeah, I'm one of the peons. I'm one of the great unwashed. I have nothing to gain. You know, I'd probably if I was invited to the wedding, I'd be the guy who stood up going, "Boo, boo! You're the princess of garbage." What was the cabbage they do on the stupid New Jersey Shore? Secondhand knowledge of that I never watched the show, but. It's just, yeah. And to me, it's also stupid in a time of international terrorism to have that many world leaders together in one room. But that's just me. You know, I could care less. 4-2-9-11. I'm not sure what that means. I don't pick up on all the stuff. Did you make me a moderator, Lou?
Yeah.
I'm a moderator? I'm going to kick you out of the room, Lou.
You can't.
I'm going to ban you.
I'm a broadcaster.
Oh, that's not fair. But anyway, what was it we were... There was... Oh, I spent an hour and a half today. Was it an hour and a half? I didn't have any reference to go from. Was I in there about an hour and a half? In an MRI machine. And I haven't been in an MRI machine. Well, they put my head in one when I had my stroke last month for maybe a minute, maybe two. But I was in for an hour, let's say an hour and 20 minutes. Well, they did an MRI of my entire body looking for clots, I guess. And any damage that the thing did, but I couldn't believe just how big I've gotten. I was in one probably 15 years ago when they thought I had MS, and I fit in there, it was fine. This time they had to use a long pole, some bear grease, and a car jack to get me inside this thing, and my arms went numb. I literally was wedged inside this thing, and... What's funny to me is the MRI uses radio waves, magnetic resonance imaging, and they pump radio waves through with a giant magnet shaped like a donut. And what was funny to me is somebody said, you know, we were outside, and what was it like? I said, it was like being stuffed into a barrel and having two angry black men beat it with sledgehammers. And then I realized, like, everybody around me heard that. And I wasn't saying to be racist. That's just the image I had. what? Half Dutch, half Scottish, half fish. Oh, now I'm half fish because I got radiated. But I was surprised, you know, that this, that just how far I've let myself go. And I say that all the time, and I am working on it. But man, the little things that you don't think about. And while I was in there, and I do have a point to this. When I was laying in there, I was thinking about the CERT training and what it must feel like to be a person in a collapsed building. You know, I had light. I had fresh air being blown in on me. I had earplugs in and stuff like that, and they had me strapped to this thing so I couldn't move. My head was wedged in with, like, these rubber shims and stuff. But I'm thinking, I know I'm going to be out of here. They told me, okay, this is going to take about an hour and 20 minutes. We're going to do six scans, starting with the top of your head, going all the way down. But I can't imagine what it would be like to be in an avalanche, in a debris pile, like over in Japan. You know, most of the people, you know, I don't think anybody survived till it. But after about 10 to 15 minutes, my arms went numb. And they say it was because of the vibration of the machine. But, no, I think they were cutting off the blood flow because they put me in this weird gown that had three sleeves in it. And I can't explain it other than that. You put it on like a regular coat, and then this flap comes around, and you slip it over your right, you know, your arm through the right hole. And even that was just making me feel constricted. And just the difference in the hospitals, you know, I thought the VA was really good until I went to the community hospital down here. They were, like, all nice and everything. Here it's like, get in the machine. And they get the pole out. They start greasing you. They wedge you in there. And then this thing's like, bang, 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 bang. And then they go, okay, how you doing in there, Dutch? And I'm like, I can't feel my arms. Oh, don't worry about it. We got another 20 minutes to go. Bang, 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 bang. I can't imagine what it would be like to be trapped under debris for a long period of time. It really gave me a different perspective because the times I was in before, I weighed about 160 pounds, not 200 and whatever I am now, and I wasn't that big. I was skinny, and it was like, oh, I feel like a human torpedo. But I've got to work that into my training. The next training we're going to have, May, is Larry Wick on the 20th, 21st and 22nd, And then on the... So April, May, and June, we're going to do psychological disaster operations, you know, the psychology of what it's like to be a victim and a rescuer, and team structure, and because we really need that bad, because some people can't follow orders. They don't understand that if somebody's in charge, you do what they say, you know. But anyway, but the psychology thing, I think what I'm going to add to it is you've got to understand the psychology of your victim. I think what I'll do, and I'd like to get you guys to give me some ideas, but here's what I thought about. You tell me if you think this is freaky or cruel. We roll people up in carpets for a little bit to give them an idea of what it feels like, and then stuff maybe foam pads or something in there with them, and let them sit in there for a little bit to see what it feels like to be what you can hear, what you can see, how little you can move. But I think it's important to give that point of view to the rescuer who's standing on the pile of debris, jumping around, listening, what exactly that victim's going through. Am I being sick here? Is this kind of Quentin Tarantino-ish? Or do you guys think this is something I should work into the training? By the way, I don't know, did I mention that I talked to Larry Wick today on the air?
No.
Larry Wick just called. Mafia games. Good going, Twinkle Toes. Larry Wick called. The class is on. The class is a go. We have enough people for the class now. But everyone that paid, get me your money as soon as you can. As soon as you can. I want to be able to, when he gets here, he's going to get off the plane and drive here. He wants to have his own car so he can drive around. I want to be able to just hand him all the cash and checks so that, you know, he and the other instructor can go to We3 on Thursday. Because they're going to be here at like about noon on Thursday. And the thing of it is, for the soldiers, I know we have some podcast soldiers that are taking the class that are listening. They can't listen now. They're all driving in traffic going home from El Cerritos military base. But he wants to meet with the soldiers separately, not the militia guys, not the church security guards, the soldiers, the people that are being rotated in and out of harm's way. He wants to meet with you for an hour or two, active duty or National Guard. Active, because he wants to teach you a different paradigm than what he's going to teach the other people. Now, I'm going to be involved in that. He's considering me, and this is going to put a lot of pressure on me, but he's considering me the safety leader for this whole thing. So don't be offended if you don't get to meet with me and the soldiers. It doesn't mean that, you know, we don't think you're all that in a bag of chips, all that in a gas mask bag. Stacy's already upset.
But
Lou's crying over it, but Lou's got another surprise coming. I don't know what it is, but it should be cool. But we'll do that. And then, what was I going to say? Oh, don't take this personal, guys, but everyone who enters the temporary dojo, which will be the classroom portion of our church where we, you know, the carpeted room where the classrooms used to be, the big room, what do they call that? The fellowship hall.
Yeah.
I call it the chow hall because we eat in there too, but the fellowship hall. I have to face everyone. I'm not going to pat you down, but I have to say, no weapons, no pistols, no knives, no pens, no combs. You can't have anything on you. We will supply you with guns that don't work anymore. The firing pins have been taken out. The barrels are spiked. What's wrong, Lou? Did we go off?
No.
Oh, you're running around like something bad happened. We're getting near the break. Well, when I get back from the break, I'm going to tell you more about what we're going to be doing with Larry Wick more specifically. And how we're going to do this class. And I'm going to tell you, he asked me some good questions about what we want to get out of it. And we'll be right back on Stronghold Radio.
I'm Judge Jones!
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
And we're back. I'm your gracious host, Dutch Jones, for now, sharing with you the separatist Christian militant worldview. I can't keep adding adjectives, can I? It's going to get out of hand. Of course, it's already out of hand, isn't it? The way things are going. By the way, thank you, Twinkle Toes, for the lovely... Can you turn that down? Are we still on the monitor on? I'm getting feedback. For the lovely jackalope card from the great state of Wyoming. We just got that today. We've been gone. We checked the mail just before we came to the studio. So thank you, Twinkle Toes. Forgot what we were talking about before the break. Oh, Larry Wick. I have to check everybody for weapons. Don't take it personal. I'm not going to fill you up or nothing, but it's an honor code. When you come in for the training, you have to leave your weapons in the car, and that means, like I said, combs, pens, anything that you could, you know, grab and accidentally poke somebody with. He's going to ship us via UPS demilitarized weapons, training guns. We're going to use some of our own training guns. We're going to use pellet guns so that if you screw up, you get a pellet in the face. No, I'm just kidding. They don't actually fire. They just give you the puff of air to let you know you screwed up. It's reality-based training without the jokes. So just be aware of that. He had asked me what I want to focus. You know, since I'm the safety director, he also said... I need to know, this is what Larry Wick said. He goes, Dutch? And he said it like it's Dutch, because he's got that gravelly voice. I wish I could do his voice. It's kind of like, anyway. But, all right, they got to us. Yeah, Twinkle Toes said she put the wrong zip code on it. We got it. He says, what do your people want to get out of this? So he asked for the skill levels. I said, we got guys that have been VIP escort. We've got active duty military. We've got combat vets. We've got little old ladies. 80-year-old ladies that just want to learn, you know, to beat up the mailman if he doesn't get the mail here on time, that kind of stuff. I said, but what we really want to do, because we've got the firearm stuff down, we've got trainers for that. We can bring in trainers all day long for firearm training. What I want to do is I want to know, we've got a maniac that comes into the church. He doesn't have a weapon of mass destruction. He's got like a machete, a baseball bat, a bag of urine, whatever, a bucket of blood. You know what the maniacs like to do in churches. I want to know how we can remove him from the church with the least amount of noise without hurting ourselves, anyone around us, or him. That would be a good thing to learn, how to just completely, you know, using pain control or whatever, or immobilize them, he said. And I said, yeah. The second thing, because of all the stringent laws in California, we can't carry any kind of weapons. They're going to get rid of open carry here. I have no doubt they're going to do it. The governor says he's going to sign it when it gets to him. That I want to know if I'm out with a group of my friends or family at Disneyland or, God forbid, somewhere in Fresno, and something bad goes down. You know, a robbery at a Denny's. How do I, from different sitting positions, pushing a baby carriage, how do I take the guy out? With all those witnesses around, you know, I don't want a lot of blood. I don't want a lot. I just want, you know, a little bit of movement and taking us. Okay. And they started asking me questions. Well, how did you guys find me? And I told them that Lou found you. And I said, Lou was, you know, he studies all these different fighting systems. And he goes, well, how old is he? I go, 15. He goes, well, what got him started in that? And I said, well, he started doing magic and sleight of hand stuff. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it plays really well to what we're doing. And he agreed. He says, somebody who can... And he says, this is how he says, the stuff I'm going to teach you that's not on the DVDs is you're going to take somebody out without anybody even seeing you doing it. You'll be walking away and the guy's curled up in a ball on the ground. I said, that's exactly what we want. And he says, well, that's something Lou could do. Because Lou got us introduced to him and, you know, bought, you know, his DVD library and has been sharing it. He goes, I want to get something special for Lou from Alaska. So, Lou, they're going to ship a moose down here for you and you're going to have your own moose to ride around on. How do you feel about that, Lou? Are you excited? He's crying.
You have to clean up.
Like the
after
Canadian
it.
Police?
The Canadian? No, moose are not Canadian police. That's Mounties.
Oh.
A moose is an animal with great big huge antlers.
Like an elk?
Like an elk, but bigger. So you're going to get your own. I don't know what he's going
to
get.
He has to clean up after it. I'm not.
So Larry said he's going to bring something special for Lou down. I wasn't going to tell him, but I'm going to torment him with it. You know, maybe it's going to be an autographed jean jacket. If you haven't been to splitsecondsurvival.com, 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 you'll notice they have those really cool jean jackets.
They don't sell them.
I know, but maybe he has them for his staff, and you'll get one that'll say, because you want to know how to spell your name.
That would be cool.
You know what would be really cool, Lou? If he got you like a a helmet that you could wear with your name on it so I could hit you with whatever I wanted, and it would only mildly hurt you.
The red man suit?
Yeah, one of those red man suits and had your name on it. Lewis! That would be good. Yes, we would need a big fence to keep
no,
the moose in. Yeah, let's stay in Lou's room. I think the moose would complain about the smell. But any teenage boy's room is pretty bad. That's what we're doing there. We've got some future training coming up in night operations. I think it's going to be June. That one's probably going to be $100 a day. This one was scary, though, guys. I put this one together, and at like the last minute, people didn't want to step forward. And I appreciate everybody who, you know, and I understand if you don't have the money till the day of the class or something, we can work that out. But when I stand up in front of a group of like 40 people and go, hey, you guys want to do some training? We got this guy. And they all go, oh, that'd be awesome. We show them the video. They all get excited. I go, only raise your hand if you're really going to be here. So I do, you know, I really, and we've got a couple listeners coming. I appreciate that. Listeners are always welcome to come to these trainings. These are our outreach trainings. These are the things where, you know, we don't have to worry about you shooting us in the back of the head if we don't know you. The airsoft, the hand-to-hand, the plastic knife stuff, you know. It's always open to you guys. And always the cert training is always open to listeners. We've got, we have Josh coming up Saturday. Listener Josh. He's a podcast listener. He's coming to camp. You're sorry? No, you don't have to be sorry. It's not your job to remember who's coming when. But you can always come in camp. You can always come and train with us. I'm getting emails from people all over the country now. They're finding out about us a lot, and I have to give credit where it's due. Not just to Liberty Tree Radio. That was a huge, big bump. But also Steve Klein. When somebody tells you, oh, I have a TV show that, you know, 2.6 million people listen to, and I know Steve, and I've gotten to know him very well, and I've learned that he is who he says he is. But at first I was like, okay, yeah, you got, you know, I got like 500 listeners, you know, and you get over 2 million. The amount of people that I get feedback from when he's on, or when he mentions the little Camp Kuia on his television show, I get hate mail. You know, I get Arab hate mail. I get praise stuff. I get, you know, it's really good. And it's nice to see that there is that cause and effect. We're making a difference, folks. You guys are making a difference. So when you take part in what we do here, you're part of something huge. So if you're trapped in your basement in an inner city, you know, and you're surrounded by thugs, realize that you're part of something bigger here. You just have to, just like the drowning man, you just have to reach out and we'll throw you a ring. But, you know, you may have to swim to shore, too, or swim to the lifeboat. We can't do everything for you, but we're here. We're here to help you. I had one guy today going, I can't believe the stuff your church is doing. If my church had, this guy in New Zealand, if my church had a shooting range and an obstacle course and a training facility like you have, I'd go to church more often. I'm like, well, you're kind of missing the point of why you go to church. I mean, the militia isn't the church. The church facilitates the militia, but it really makes me feel good when people think like that. At least, you know, they envy us. I know that's wrong, but they envy us, and it makes me feel a sense of righteous pride that I'm part of something like this, and you should too. Especially those of you that have purchased stuff from us, that have been listening for a while, that have been helping out. You pod people who we never hear from, shame on you. I'm just kidding. The fact that you even listen to Practical Christianity or the Code 20 stuff shows that you care. Shows that you're at least putting your mind to work. Let's attach some acts to that, you know. Faith without works is fruitless. So the works part is what we got to do. And I think what I'm going to do here is, so when I set up these trainings, I'm really cautious because I almost got hit hard with this one because if we didn't have the people, I was going to have to figure out a way to reimburse him for his plane tickets because he already bought them and the cost of the rental of his automobile. So it's imperative that when people say they're going to do something, they do it.
And I judge a person by how their follow-up is. Now, I know people forget little things. You know, I do. You know, hey, did you going to get me that CD? Or I forgot. But it's the big things. I know if you show faithfulness in the little things, you'll be faithfulness in the big things. That's how you practice. But if people say they're going to show up, I really, unless, you know, there's been an avalanche on the pass, I hope people will be here for things. I've been made to look stupid a lot of times because I've had, like, I remember an entire militia from San Diego. We're coming to this training. We're bringing 22 people. So the poor ladies in the kitchen prepared 22 extra meals, and then nobody showed up. And I looked like an idiot, and a lot of people were thinking I was making it up that I was talking to other militias. This is a couple of years ago. I'm still furious about it, and I don't talk to that militia anymore.
They never called her?
Never called, said they weren't coming, but the ladies in the kitchen made arrangements. And it really hurt a lot of relationships I had with people. So now I've learned I don't take anybody at their word. I take them by, you know, the proof is in the pudding. When they show up with a big bowl of pudding and I know they're here, then I go, hey, look, this guy told me he was coming. So make sure that, you know, if you're telling us you're going to come to something, you know, and we understand if something breaks down or you get struck by lightning. But, you know, don't make a promise you can't fulfill to the best of your ability. And that's the way we should do things anyway as Christian soldiers. You know, I want to be able to count on people and know that they're going to do everything 100%, you know, when they say. When somebody says, yeah, it's done, I flipped A, B, and C, I put this over there, and then you go and you find out it's all mixed up, you start going, well, I'm not going to use that guy. I'm not going to trust that guy. And what happens to that guy? You know how it goes in groupthink. He'll fade out of the unit. And it's not good for anybody. It's not good for anybody. But if you've got idiots that habitually screw up, you got to counsel them or jettison them. And unfortunately, we've had to jettison a lot of people. And we're running into that. And the people we jettison, they tend to not go very far. And they tend to become some of our biggest critics in the community. Oh, yeah, those guys are maniacs up there. And they make up outright lies. You know, oh, you know what they're doing up there, you know. And I have to laugh at it because there's nothing like a scorned lover, but only worse is a scorned church member, somebody who used to go to your church and now goes to another church, and they just love to gossip. And we run into like 3 or 4 of those things in the last few days, and you're going to find it in any group you're in. I don't care if it's a car club, book of the month club. If you have regular meetings and there's more than 3 people, somebody's going to be a pain in the butt. And it's just the way it is. My goal is to not be that pain in the butt or be the reason that people become a pain in the butt. And I've fallen short on that a few times, but I do my best. I try not to get to be part of the problem. I try to be more about being part of the solution. And that's where team organization comes in. And you've got to decide early on, maybe after you've had 2 or 3 group field trainings, who the leaders really are. There may be some self-designated leaders because, hey, he's the guy who started it. He's the guy who recruited you. He's got the most experience. But he can't do it alone. You're going to burn that guy out. So you're going to need to have a main leader, a commander, you call him whatever you want, Grand Poobah of the Water Buffalo for all I care. But he needs to have at least 2 assistants, one for logistics, one for planning and scheduling. And you pick people that are good at doing those things or are willing to learn how to do those things. And there's going to be trial and error. But team structure has to have at least 3 people that are accountable. And they should be able to do each other's jobs, you know, and rotate around. The worst thing you can have is a specialist that only that guy knows how to do it. And it usually comes in the line of technology or those kind of things, engineering. Like if I left everything up to Lou to run the radio stations, where would I be when Lou's not here? No, I have to know what he's doing. And he can't have an attitude of, well, I'm going to protect all this and I'm not going to let anybody know how to do it. Like if your group only has 1 gunsmith, you're wrong. You should have a gunsmith and an assistant gunsmith. And that gunsmith should be, every time they get a chance, training that under guy or under woman to learn how to fix the stuff. Same thing with your medical. You can't have just 1 doc. You got to have 2 or 3. In fact, if you have a small enough group and there are 7 people, everybody could get 3 or 4 tasks. Model it after special forces. So that if one person gets taken out or isn't able to make it to the rendezvous point, you still function. It just is strange to me how people try to run militias the same way they run a small business. Tight-fisted. They won't delegate authority. And that's why a lot of small businesses fail, is that the owners, the managers, who's ever in charge of it, doesn't cause their team to grow and to be able to fill in and backfill when things go wrong. Now, one of the biggest reasons That we never feared fighting the Russian military, and I don't fear fighting the Chinese military, is they don't have that paradigm. In the American military, everybody from a buck private up to the captain in a group usually has a pretty good idea of what's going on and can function with the equipment, unless it's some hyper-specialized like nuclear stuff or something. But everybody can do the job. And you take out the sergeant, you know, the specialist or corporal can take over. You take out the corporal, you know, then the E3s can figure out who's going to be in charge. You know, not always, I know that. But in tyrannical militaries, truly tyrannical militaries, they isolate the enlisted from the non-commissioned and the officers from everybody else. And that's why when you see fighting, like when we were looking at fighting the Russians, they didn't have a chance. Even though they had a numerical advantage on equipment, they were actually behind on people, but their command structure didn't lend itself well to a fluid battlefield. And so militias, being a guerrilla element, you've got to be flexible. But you don't want to overburden. If one person has more than, and this is an extreme number, but this is what the textbooks say I've read, more than 7 responsibilities, you need to split them off and get somebody else to help them. I would say any more than 5 responsibilities. That's pretty much all I can juggle at one time. And an example would be, like, you've got a guy, he's in charge of purchasing the ammo for everybody. That's one task. He's in charge of scheduling range times. That's 2 tasks. He's in charge of procuring training material that everybody can study and then apply at the range. That's 3 tasks. You kind of get the idea there? And then let's say he's also in charge of making sure that there's food at the range when you get there. It sounds like, well, that's not too hard. But it is. And the smaller the group, the more tasks you're going to have. So the bigger the group, the advantage is you have less tasks. And then also rotate those people. What we used to do in the first militia I was in is every year, we'd take volunteers first. We'd say, okay, Dutch is going to train somebody to be the person that's in charge of the maps. So we need somebody to volunteer for that. And there would be like a month or 2-month transitional period where that person would be being trained, and then you'd hand it over to them. Ideally, you would be trained. You'd always have a second, but that didn't always work out because you didn't have enough people. So there was always a second, and you would rotate. Okay, now you're in charge. Here's the maps. We had survival trailers, and we would rotate those around. It became an engineering duty. You had to maintain the trailers, make sure the generators worked, make sure the winches worked, make sure the plumbing worked on the water heaters and showers. It was all self-contained. We had 2 trailers. We had a communications trailer. It had all the ham radio equipment, and everybody had to be ham functional. We didn't even care if they were licensed. As long as they knew how to use them, that was fine by us. But they had to be able to turn them on, make sure the batteries were charged so that if we ever went and grabbed it. You rotate those duties around, and after a few cycles of doing that, everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Sure, you'll have your best guy at, you know, if you have a registered nurse, you want him to be your medic. I understand that. I completely understand that. But unit structure is key. And this one really bugs people because I just said we're not tyrannical, but in a crisis situation, you need to have one person calling the shots. And if the consensus is that guy knows what he's doing, you follow it. It's just like in combat. If you got a commander that's given wacky commands, then everybody goes, wait a minute, you know, maybe we should rethink this. You find a way to do that. But in general, somebody calls the shots in a disaster or military-type scenario for a militia. And if you don't like it, it's a militia, you can leave. However, some militias have different attitudes. Like if we were in a siege-type situation here at our stronghold, and we've had people quit because of this, because all they want to do is argue. Oh, that's not how I would do it. This is the way I want to do it. And then when you ask them to be in on the planning and the committees, they're never there. I hate committees anyway. But we finally told this guy, and says, look, if we're in a siege situation, and we have, you know, we're surrounded, and bad guys are trying to get our food and attack our families, and you were to disobey an order like that, you'd be shot. He's like, what? What? He told our commander that, and I looked at him, and I said, and I'd be the one that would have to shoot you because I'm a lieutenant, and I would shoot you. I wouldn't hesitate to save my family to shoot you because you're being an idiot. And you have to decide right now, you're either going to play the way we're playing, the way you agreed to play when we organized this thing, or you're going to have to leave and we'll stay friends. Well, we didn't stay friends because, you know, he's a little bitter about it. But we've had 2 or 3 people over the years leave because of that, because they won't obey orders. And they're usually ex-military, non-combat arms guys. They're always mechanics or engineers. And I have nothing against mechanics and engineers. Don't get me. Yeah, desk jockeys, as Stacy likes to say. But and it's always on combat stuff. It's always on code of conduct stuff. Like if we decide, you know, if we catch enemy combatants and they're raping and pillaging, they get shot. Dogs run into the microphone. And somebody doesn't like that. Or inversely, the other way around. It says, well, we need to kill all prisoners. We go, wait a minute, that's not how Washington did it. You know, regular soldiers that we capture in combat or enemy combatants, we have to treat them in a certain Christian manner. Well, no, that's not, no, in Vietnam I shot everybody. And then you find out the guy was really a heavy equipment mechanic and he never shot anybody. And that tends to be the rule I'm finding. But you've got to get these people out and having a good structure and having day-to-day operation. Well, you can't do it day-to-day. You're not fortunate like we are. You don't live together like we do. But let's say month-to-month or week-to-week interactions with each other, you'll get to see the people that aren't going to be willing to take orders. Now, you may be able to salvage them. Like if I had a guy that's a loner, doesn't work well with others, but the guy functions excellent in everything else, he's got a good moral compass, he's got a good grounding in Christ, make him a shore watcher or a sniper or an OP. Go, you know, because we've got plans for it. I'm not going to go into it on the radio, but, you know, a few thousand yards down the road on a hilltop, you know, we might have a hut up there that's camouflaged, you know, with a hardwire phone and, you know, communications. That guy might be a great candidate to stay there, you know. And being a good leader means identifying the weaknesses as well as the skills of the people that are earnest in wanting to be part of your group and making sure you put them where they do the most good for the group. So you don't want to jettison everybody, but you try and work around them. I, believe it or not, am one of those guys that likes to work alone. I force myself to be a trainer. You okay, Lou? Sound like you're dying over there. How many cigars are you up to this week? You got to stop smoking cigars. Everybody can hear you, man. It's like sounds like you're hacking up a lung. Where was I? You know, try and salvage these people. There's always something. But me, like I said, I don't like to work with people. I would much rather be up on a hill sending Morse code. Did it, you know, and watching stuff and be left alone with maybe my wife and kids. I hate communal living. I hate the stuff that goes along with it. I hate the old women that try and start stuff. I hate the old men that are nagging on the young men. I hate the lazy young men that don't want to do the work that the old men don't need to be doing. And it's tough for me. It really is. I've grown a little more wise, hopefully some, in my older age. I'm only 45. But I've also grown a little more... What's the word? Longer to anger. It takes a lot more to anger me. But there was a time when I just wanted to slap everybody. You know, just like, no, you're going to do it. I did it. You can do it. What are you whining about? I don't want to go dig a latrine. Look, I dug the latrines last month. Yeah, but I don't want to dig a latrine. I've gotten a little more, I don't know what the word is. I hate to say political, but yeah, I've learned how to get people to do things they don't want to do by making them think they want to do it. Does that make any kind of sense to you guys? And sometimes, you know, and that's why I've been forced into the semi-leadership role I'm in. I don't want to be a leader. I don't even like being a trainer. I mean, I enjoy getting up and telling people how to shoot and sharing with them and everything. But there's nothing worse than when I give a big old long class and then afterwards, you know, I always say, are there any questions, any feedback? No, there's no questions, no feedback. And then for the next hour, I'm fielding questions and feedback as I'm trying to get to my car to go home to spend time with my wife. Because nobody's got the guts to raise your hand in the classroom scenario. I hate that part about training. And nothing bugs me more when I've just spent, you know, 45 minutes going over a topic and then somebody comes and asks me to basically tell them the whole thing again in the parking lot. Well, what you're saying is... And the other thing I don't like is war stories. If you come to one of our trainings, especially Larry Wick, because he said he's the same way, we don't want to hear war stories. We don't want to hear, oh, well, I was in an alley one time and I took on three Vietnamese gang members, you know, with a machete and a lawnmower.
A dull machete,
and they had a lawnmower. He doesn't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't mind input. Like if I miss something, I love being corrected. I do. If somebody goes, Dutch, you just said something that didn't make sense. I go, really? And I go, okay, thank you for pointing that out because I hate. Because the way I train, you build on the previous statements, on the previous concepts. And if I screw something up, it screws up the whole day, and it multiplies. It's like a force multiplier for bad. So I try to do what I can to encourage people. If I see something stupid, just raise your hand and go, that didn't make sense. Can you explain that? I have no problem with that. People talking in my classes, oh, I just go furious. You know, I don't mind somebody leaning over going, hey, that's a pretty good idea. I never thought of that. Or, oh, that reminds me. You know, but then when you look over and they keep talking, I just want to grab an eraser and throw it at them. And I think I will from now on. I've smacked a few people in the fanny for not paying attention, but with, like, sticks. We use these, instead of guns, we use these wooden sticks. But that's neither here nor there. But sometimes the Lord puts us in places we don't want to be. And if there's a little bit of order, because the Lord is order. The enemies is what chaos is. That's what street gangs are. The power, you know, the strongest guy becomes the leader because he beats everybody into submission until he's in a weakened situation and somebody takes him out. We don't want to live like that. We don't want to live like savage street gang animals, do we? So you've got to put your teams together in a way that they function at the very onset. Like I said, 2 to 3 meetings, you've got to have the structure in. Because once you've got that structure, you can get a lot done. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth here. We don't practice this all the time. In fact, we probably haven't done half the things I said that a team should do that I wish. It's always the same 4 or 5 people doing all the work, and the remaining 20 to 30 or 40 benefiting from it. And that's just a fact of life. In fact, those numbers are pretty high. If you go to a church or a militia that's bigger, you're going to have about 5% of the people doing everything. So if we've got 40 people and we got five people doing everything, that's more like 9 to 10%, right? I'm not good at math anymore. I blame the stroke. That and the constant beatings from Lou. But be happy with what participation you get. Don't burn them out. Encourage leadership in others. If somebody shows... My favorite thing to do is I always get these people that always have the suggestions. You know, the class was really great, Dutch, but what you should have done... I'm like, okay, next month you're going to be my assistant instructor. I need you to do this and do that. And with one exception, I think it was Twinkle Toes, nobody stepped up and done it. Twinkle Toes one time said, hey, you're kind of ignoring the female side of the medical hygiene part. And I said, okay, next month you can do it. And she did. And I have a prayer, and she's still in the room. I hope I can't tell if she is or not. Yes, she's the only person up here that's done that. Everybody else that's come to me, you know, I was a lifeguard, and I know this. Okay, well, you can teach it next time. And then I'll hit them up. Hey, we're coming up on the next cycle of training. Have you got something to put together? Oh, no. I didn't put it together. Okay. And I said, well, then don't make any comments next time. I've actually said that. I go, unless you're willing to step up, I don't want to hear it. You know, don't tell me what I shoulda, coulda, woulda when you're not willing to give me a hand with it. And every class I say, hey, I don't know how much longer I can do these. Next time I'm probably going to need an assistant. Nobody stepped up. Pastor wants to, but he's already doing 12 things. I'm already doing 8 or 9. But those are the perils. I hope you're learning from what I'm putting down. We're only going to do an hour today because it is Bible study night. But I think this hour was a good solid hour. If anybody wants to repeat it, I hope they do. Liberty Tree Radio, that means you. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow night we'll have Practical Christianity in our second hour with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. First hour, who knows what I'll talk about. But I hope you got something out of this. And I hope my intentions shine through, that it's not just me coming on here and trying to sound like I know everything, because I don't. The sword is heavy, the battle is hard. Victory belongs to the Lord, but that doesn't mean we don't have to show up and punch the time clock from, you know, every day, right? He didn't make us to just sit back and watch from the stands. So just remember that as the dog knocks the microphone around. We're coming to you from the church at Kaweah, Stronghold Radio, and we're here. Thank you, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Stay sparkly, San Diego!